session number 16711, Fred Welsh, reel 18.
Mr. Welsh, reel 18. What happened next on the farm, Mr. Welsh?
Well, we've gotten into Lent, into the spring of 1945. The weather changed, and so did the war. It was obvious now that daily we saw trucks with German soldiers retreating from Russia and Czechoslovakia and places like that. And we knew now that the end was near. And we had a pleasant night one night. A sergeant major came in and stopped with the guard who was in charge of us, stopped the night. And when we had captured in the beginning of the war, you were always chided. They used to sing, "It's a long way to Tipperary, show me the way to go home." And when this man came in here, we sang the same songs to him and said, "You sang those when we were caught, but you never made it. But we've made it, and we will make it to Berlin." And he only stopped one night. And this traffic increased, and then the guard said, "You must now know that it's all over, but we are responsible for your safety, supposedly. We will have to take you away from the fighting." And they took us from the Russians, supposedly, towards the British. And we were told to pack everything up that we could carry and go to your farms and try and get something to food. And I went to farm and I got about 4 days' rations off the farm and 3 bottles of schnapps.
What date was this?
Easter time. And we started, we got all our kit. I got 3 bottles of schnapps, I got bread, I got a thing called schmaltz, which was like pork fat in a jar. It was lovely. It was, because they didn't butcher the pigs like our butchers butchered them. They had a different system. Because that's one job I had to do, kill pigs or help. And we got all these rations and we set away at 5 o'clock in the morning and we marched and got to this Vildon again, which is on the road from Spittal, Klagenfurt, Vildon, Graz, and through to Vienna.
Was this the original 12 of you that were marching?
Yes, they were all there, yes. And when we got to Vildon, we bumped the main road, and it was crammed with prisoners of war, Russian prisoners, French prisoners, Italian prisoners, political prisoners, German soldiers in retreat. And I was very fortunate. This crowd kept together. And all the afternoon when we set off walking again, because we walked till 6 o'clock at night, the RAF strafed this column of German transport, which we were among. So you were back in the war front line again, you had to look after yourself. And we marched for a long time, and we went to...
There must have been some casualties from these
aircraft. Yes, never proven, but we did hear of a camp at a place called Brook, which was a railway. The lads worked on the railway there. They lost 120 in a bombing raid, because they weren't allowed to leave the work, apparently. whether it was true or not, we never got that. But there was crowds and crowds, and by now, sergeants and sergeant majors of the German and people like me, who could natter a little bit by now, were now being asked opinions of what they should do, because there was no destination in mind. It was just keep you out of trouble. And there was about 8 or 12 of us kept together in this big march, and it was a huge crowd of people. And the sergeant major said that they would be much safer if the Germans split everybody up into English, Italian, French, and Russian, and parted us a bit. Because one incident that happened this night was a big Russian came into our camp, and he had a thumb which was the same size as his other four fingers with blood poison. Never seen anything like it. And he came to see if Ray Hutchison, who was our medic, could do anything for him. And he said to me, he says, well, all I can do is cut it. So we raked and round, we talked and we asked and we bartered, and we got a brand new razor blade, which was a find, really, a razor blade. And he said, just what I want. And he boiled this razor blade and he lanced this lad's thumb. And I've never seen a man's face ease from pain to ecstasy like it. And never in my life have I seen so much pus come out of anything. And that man said, oh, he's going to keep with us. Well, that meant we were going to feed him, and he was a huge man. And this was one of the reasons we wanted rid of them, because the Italians and the Russians and the rest were so hungry that you could never trust them to share. There would have been fights. And we managed to get into a British column to march. And we went and we left there.
Can I ask you give me some description of how the column was organized during the day? For example, what time in the morning would you start?
Well, first of all, was the second day we got a sergeant major in charge of us, a German sergeant major. And tomorrow was always the day you were going to get rations, and tomorrow never came. So this man said to us, he says, I'm sorry, he says, you're getting the same rations as me. And we got a handful of beans. That's what we were given. So a lad called, a strange name, Haven John Collins from New Zealand, he said, look, he says, don't you bother about us on the march. Turn a blind eye and we'll feed you. So the first thing we did, we were going through a little village. You're going through little villages about, well, little Austrian villages, we know less than 20 houses. And this was obvious when this big column of people walked through. The occupants of the houses came out to see it. And during this time they were out the front, one of us was round the back in the pantry, loaf of bread. And that's how we fed them. We start to steal like that. And we were having a burden carrying our packs. So we went through one village, and in a little yard, a farm yard, there was a little hand cart which finished up in our possession. We put all our kit on there and there were 12 of us in this party. And you had to pull the cart for an hour. We had ropes off the, we got ropes off this the hand cart. And if there was a big pass or a hill or it was heavy going, you got on the ropes. But if you weren't on the ropes, this was your period of rest, an hour. And the other hour, you had to scavenge for food. One thing we did was you would sell, you would have a pair of socks, and you'd hold them up, sell them to a farmer on the roadside. And a chicken, eggs, anything that he had for sale. And you'd fold these socks into a ball, throw them to him. But he only got one sock. We'd kept one. And that was sold as a pair of socks in the next village. If you had chicken anywhere near, it was picked up. One night we had nothing, and this John Collins, who was a New Zealander, a farmer from New Zealand, and he came in one night carrying a dead pig, a little piglet that he'd killed and caught. And this was how we lived for about 5 weeks. And this guard used to come for his mail every night. And one place, one of the biggest towns we went through, was a town called Judenburg, which was an SS camp. And by now the SS were desperate, because as I've mentioned before, most of the SS, ordinary soldiers, were not German people. They were Russians, they were French. They'd got these people just because they could get food if they got in the SS. But now they were homeless because people knew that they'd been in the SS. They couldn't go back to the country. So they were really wild people. And this Sergeant Major said, "Do not do anything today because you're in SS country." And that night, believe it or not, we had a Dixie of soup stolen out of the SS cookhouse. Because they were all on the roadside watching you go by. And one of the lads, a lad called Wilkinson, went in and got this Dixie of soup. And we had that. And moved up 5 o'clock next morning, mind, and we were on the march out of the road of them. And
where were you sleeping at night?
Sometimes you were in old empty hotels on the floor, or you were in farm barns, you were in the roadside, you slept on the bank side. Because now it was getting summertime, we were well past Easter. And we marched over the Alps, over Salla Pass. And we did find it hard pulling this cart up here. And when we got to the top, they all were so tired of pulling this cart, they wanted to push it over the top. But we said, "No, we've pulled it up. Surely we can let it come down." And we did not throw it away. And we marched like this till about Whitsuntide, Whitsaturday.
Were you, did you have people attempting to steal the stuff you had?
No. Odd ones have we heard of, but our group, there was 12 of us, so nobody could get into what we had, and we did pretty well.
You said you started as early as 5 in the morning. When did you get a break on the march?
Oh, about every 2 hours you stopped and had a rest. Because by now the guards were... The other guards were really hungry. They were getting nothing. We got to one place, a Red Cross wagons did catch us up and dished out one parcel between 9. So that was a little bit respite. Because, as I say, now it was complete chaos now. The Germans were completely finished now. You knew you were coming home, so why escape? And we went over Salapas. I don't remember.
You'd have a break for lunch, or if you might call it lunch.
Well, you just had what you had, and many time you had it as you were on the move, because the Germans were scared to death to stop, and they wanted to get to the destination we were heading for that night, and you would just march and march, and a lot of people were desperate on this march, mind. They weren't all as lucky as me, and got into a... we organised ourselves a bit, but obviously there were people in these groups who weren't nice people, would steal off you if you give them the chance, and you had to be wary of getting into their company. But
what happened if anyone dropped out, exhausted or ill?
Well, they were left. They were just left now, because there was many guards was falling out as the lads. And we went to over this Salapas, and that's the only time it ever rained. And we got drenched to the skin that day, and we marched into a place we'd started from when we got off the train, marked Pongau. And we would just put on the river banks there, and on the grass, and we just left there. And it was a compound, a wired compound.
Were you heading directly west, or was it a...
Oh, anywhere, just marched anywhere. And, I mean, we didn't do, in a straight line, we didn't do a lot of distance, but round and round, round mountains and village to village. You marched a long, long way.
Had you got into Germany yet?
No, we never got into Germany. We were just marching into Mark Pongau was, it wasn't very far from Salzburg. And we were left there, and every hour word came that the war was finished. And then finally we were left without any guards, and the war had finished. So this crowd of us all slept together. We went out, and we got a beautiful truck, a big Mercedes truck, about a 5-tonner, beautiful truck. And we went down to the railway station and ransacked a first-class carriage of its luggage racks, which were nets, the seats and the backs. And then we went to the goods yard, and what we got was a few bags of sugar, stolen, and a few bags of flour. We took this wagon back and we made it into a camp, a caravan. The nets were put on the top and some slept in there, and then we had these cushions from the first class railway carriage. And we opened a shop, because other people were selling meat. They'd stolen cattle and killed the cattle, selling meat. And it now became a little market.
And this was bartering again?
Bartering. Oh, no, stealing now. Nothing to barter with now. You were in charge now. I mean, you marched into a house and you took the radio. You'd had your share being a prisoner. Now you've got your own bar.
The civilians would be quite...
frightened, and pleased that to help you, kind of thing, because, again, tell them we looked after you. This was the sentence everybody used to say. You could, some lads had motorbikes as long as the petrol lasted. Others had big Humber cars. One lad had a colonel's horse, his charger. And yet these were used till they ran out of petrol, and then they were pushed into the River Drow.
And this compound you were in was an open one, wasn't hutted? Anything, were you in the
No huts. It was all lads made tents, the ground sheets and such like, and you were just told to sit there. And you sat there, and as I say, we were quite comfortable. We managed to get there on. And we got in with some French lads who were in a nearby prison camp. They had never marched. They'd left there, and it was a wooden hut. And we had a celebratory lunch there. There was four of us went out one night. John Collins, Wilkinson, and I forget the other one, and myself. And this John Collins said, drive the sheep through that wooden chalet on the hillside, he says, because there'll be hay in there for the sheep. They'll go in easy. And he went in there, and we drove about 10 sheep through. And when he came out, he'd slaughtered one, and it was cut up and everything. And I still have the menu to this day of this meal we had. We had lamb chops for dinner and potatoes, and these Frenchmen had a bit of something that would biscuits and margarine, I think it was, and we made a little celebration meal. And that went on, that sort of activity went on until uprode the Americans, and they brought, the first time I'd ever seen them, K-Russians. And we were told, and I always remember his name because it was part of my family name, a Major Campbell was in charge, and we were told to get into hundreds, which was what they were putting in an aeroplane for parties.
What was your reaction when the Americans turned up?
Well, you went down and you cheered for a while, and then myself, I suppose I just sat and thought, well, I've made it, it's over, and I'd just a quiet, peaceful half hour by myself. I did, by myself. I was never a one for cheering and jumping on wires, but it was over. And within about 4 days, we were taken into a big airfield. And Dakota planes, I always remember them, came.
They look after you well, the Americans?
Oh, yes, yes. Yeah. Brought cinema shows, films, which they played in that night, with a screen on trees, that was all. You couldn't go inside. They had music and good food. And we went in wagons. You got in wagons, which was your plane load, and you went to this airport near Salzburg, and Dakotas came in as fast as they could to take you to Brussels.
Had your health been good for the...
Oh, yeah, I'd improved now with the farm food.
How long were you actually walking, Martin?
Oh, 7 weeks. Exactly 7 weeks, Good Friday to Whitsaturday.
Any idea what distance you covered?
No, I could never tell the distance. I've tried to measure. I've got it all marked in a map, but I could never measure, because it's a German map, actually.
But physically, you managed it okay?
Oh, I managed it okay now, yeah. I got pulled around with the farm food, because... As I said before, one item, they used to take the milk. When they milked the cows on the farm I was on, the milk was taken to a dairy, and the cream was taken from the milk, which the Nazis kept, and the farmer got the skim milk. And I was curious about this, and I asked about this, and I said, what happens to the milk? And he told us, like, oh, I says, that's too heavy for the girl to carry. I'll take that tomorrow. And I took that down. I took myself a tin down. I got a big tin of cream out of this dairy, which I kept. And as I say, you say you got fed at the farm and you had your Red Cross parcel. And one of the things I always say was very good in a Red Cross parcel was porridge. I always found it was a good food. And I do to this day. I think it's the best cereal anybody can eat to this day.
So you got to the airport and put on a plane, obviously.
Well, our plane didn't arrive. The one I was at, allocated, wasn't arrived. Just a point about this Major Campbell. He says, I'm sorry, lads, but there'll be one here tomorrow. So we just said, well, where are we going to sleep? Oh, he says, I'll find you somewhere to sleep. And he said, I'll put a picture show on. And this is when he had the pictures in this, on a, just on the wall. And he went across to some houses nearby, about four in the terrace. Right, he says, everybody out, I want these houses. And these people were turfed out, and we went in the houses for the night. He was really tough on the Austrians, really tough on them. He didn't get tuppence for them, whether they were old, young, invalid or not. They were enemy to him. And the next morning a plane came, and I always remember it, and every time I hear the tune, I think of it. And it had on, Ain't Misbehave, and that was the plane. And the pilot said, I'm sorry, we're not allowed to take you because of electric storms over the Alps, because they were flying us to Brussels. But he says, I don't know when we'll come back for you, because we're going on leave, that's why we're going to chance it. And I said, are you taking the plane? He said, yeah. I said, well, if you dare go, I dare go. And I got a plane load, volunteers. And mind, it was a rough ride. Rough. I always remember you sat and, well, it was dishing fags out, you know, the American lads sat, yeah, pack the fags in, pack the cigarettes there. And everybody's enjoying their cigarettes. But they're so nipping them because they were changing colour. You used to drop about 10 foot in this electric storm. Terrible. But we arrived at Brussels, where you were now in English hands, and you had to report, talk to the officials. You were sent into rooms, rank, name and number. You were examined and told.
Were,
and you
were you debriefed at this time? Asking
debriefed
about your
and all that, life. Yes. How had you been treated? What was your health like? Had you had everything? Where did you belong? Where had you been? And then you got a night out in Brussels itself. There wasn't much to do. It's like England, there was very little.
Have they given you a new uniform at this
yes,
point?
You got... No, you didn't get kitted out. Because that was just a transit camp. And as soon as there was an empty plane, you were on it. And I was never a one for going into town because, as I say, I never drank and everybody was after drinks. And I happened to hear of this plane going on about in the afternoon going to London. So I went and saw a sergeant and said, can you chance of getting on it? And by this time, believe it or not, I'd met up with Tom Porter again. And I said, I can get us on a plane if you want to go. I said, it's rough. Oh, he says, I'll go. And we got on this plane, and this was a British plane, much, much better, tidier. Things were quite different of the Americans and the British. And we flew to some airport near Slough, because we went through the town of Slough.
What date did you arrive in England?
Ooh. It was well after VE Day. We arrived on this RAF field. And WAF people met you at the bottom of the steps. And you were taken into a big hangar where there was food like you we'd never seen for years. And you just sat down and gorged yourself. Anything you wanted, you could have. It was there. Drinks, cigarettes, good food, anything. you wondered. And this was about tea time by now.